Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is June 11th, Tuesday evening, and you're with us on another episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. We are here in the studio. I'm Dr. Dave.
I'm Rich Nick, and I'm back from vacation.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Peter.
Thank you all for joining us. So, we have quite a show tonight, guys, don't we?
I guess.
Alright, we're still talking about
the paranormal stuff?
Paranormal stuff, that's right. That's what we're going to be talking about, all aspects of the paranormal.
Did you guys miss me last show?
Yeah, well, we had Eric with us last show, and he actually did pretty good. Not too bad. Everybody enjoyed listening to him.
I missed you, Rich.
Thank you, Pete. We did. I can always count on Pete.
We did miss you, absolutely.
You could have at least brought us back a souvenir, man.
Or some good weather.
Sorry about that. The weather in Arizona was absolutely beautiful. I didn't see a drop of rain in a week.
Here in the Northeast, all we've seen in the past week is rain and 60-degree weather. So hopefully wherever you're all listening from, the weather is better than it is here in Central New York.
Agree.
So we have a lineup tonight of news from the paranormal realm. We have some technology and technique that we're going to be talking about. And we also have a guest caller tonight, Rich, don't we?
Yes, we have Paulette Huff is going to be giving us a call around 8:30, so tune in for that. She's going to share with us some of her paranormal experiences. As well, we're going to talk a little bit about tarot cards. So if anyone out there in our listening audience is interested in learning more about tarot cards, Paulette will be sharing some of that with us tonight.
Can we get some winning lottery numbers, too?
Yeah,
maybe
I wish.
And in addition to our regular lineup, we are also going to be talking about one of our upcoming events at the Hulbert House in Boonville, New York, HulbertCon 2013, with special guest John Zaffis from Haunted Collector on the Sci-Fi Channel. So we have some news and updates about that event as well. So please stay with us.
Welcome back, our listening audience. This is Rich, your co-host, and tonight I want to share with you some fascinating paranormal news. I found this online. It appears that celebrities also have their own paranormal encounters. And yes, even Miley Cyrus recalls a paranormal experience,
ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, it's too good to pass by. I have to share this with the audience. During a leg of her United Kingdom tour, where she was touring, because that's what she does, making her music, she was staying in a hotel that used to be a bakery, and there were rumors that it was quote-unquote haunted. Well, while she was taking a shower, she felt like someone was staring at her in the bathroom, and it turns out that other people have seen a little boy who sits on the sink and likes to watch people taking a shower, so it's kind of creepy in itself, but...
Is his name Tom?
Well, watching Miley Cyrus is kind of creepy in itself later. She could have sworn that she saw a little boy sitting on the sink there just kicking his feet. She later discovered that the previous owners of the bakery had died, and their son had taken over the running of the company. So she thinks that she saw the son of the people who passed. So just wanted to show everyone that even Miley Cyrus has had her own ghost experiences.
Well, it's not unusual for celebrities. Elizabeth Taylor and Peter Sellers were both well-known people who had experiences. After several heart attacks there, Peter Sellers began to have an out-of-body experience, I guess, and that changed his life forever.
Well, right now I'm looking for Justin Bieber So right now I'm Googling Justin Bieber, paranormal, ghosts, hauntings, and see if I come up with anything on that, folks.
And Elizabeth Taylor, she was actually pronounced dead, I believe, and then she came back and she began seeing stuff.
Huh. So there's that tie-in again with the near-death experiences and the paranormal. You know, it's funny, there's a lot of TV shows out there about people who have paranormal experiences. There's a few about celebrity paranormal encounters, and I know that even on a lot of the mainstream paranormal shows, they've explored Hollywood and a lot of famous celebrity homes, so there may be a tie-in. These people like it so much, they're hanging around.
I will say that Sharon Tate one, though, that was on, I believe it was Ghost Hunters, that was a pretty interesting episode.
With Chris Fleming. Yeah, that was amazing. For folks who don't know about this, Chris Fleming, who's another paranormal investigator, who used to have the TV show called Dead Famous on the Biography Channel, appeared on the TV show Ghost Hunters. And there's an investigation of the property where Sharon Tate was murdered. And during the investigation, Chris Fleming was asking the spirit in the room to bring the temperature of the room down. And Jason and Grant looked pretty skeptical as they were watching Chris, like, what, dude, what? No, this is not going to happen. And as he kept asking the spirit to drop the temperature, they were holding thermometers and temperature recorders, and they actually recorded the temperature dropping down to where Chris said, no, it's not good enough. I need you to bring it to, well, I think, what, Pete, what, 61.3 or some number he just picked out of the air. And don't you know that the temperature dropped right down to that point on the digital thermometer? Absolutely amazing.
Well, Steve, we should have tried that a couple weeks ago. You remember that the room actually dropped 5 degrees in less than 10 seconds there?
Yes, I do. And that would have been a good test.
Of course, that's all part of the documentation process.
Well, it's not uncommon when we investigate. We get cold spots and things like that, and I don't personally myself have a temperature recorder, but I know some of the investigators do, and they record it. But it is kind of a chilling experience to walk into an area where all of a sudden it feels like the temperature's dropped like 10 degrees, literally.
Usually the members of RIP use my breasts as a temperature gauge.
I knew he was going to say that.
They look at my t-shirt and gauge it by the sweat that starts forming. If it looks like a smiley face, we're definitely above 90 degrees.
Oh, on that note, what other interesting paranormal news is out there crawling the web?
Well, they have Bigfoot being assassinated in Pennsylvania was all over the news again last week.
Okay, so we talked about that 2 weeks ago. Apparently, there was some buzz about a Sasquatch being murdered or killed, hunted, whatever. However, they were unable to reclaim the body.
Well, I guess you could feed a family for a whole year on a Sasquatch. Huh?
Maybe. I don't know. If it tastes like the Sasquatch sticks, maybe you could, but
Squatch burgers.
Squatch burgers.
Squatch stew.
I'm telling you right now, that to me is still the ultimate paranormal find is Bigfoot. I mean, there's so much evidence you can see about UFOs, and so much evidence you can see about ghosts and spirits, but, man, Bigfoot, he is an elusive one.
And leading into that this weekend, we're actually going on the big cat hunt out there in the Adirondack Mountain area.
Wow. Okay, so we need to elaborate on this big cat hunt just a little bit. Steve, maybe you could walk us through what's going on here, because this is kind of weird.
Well, one of our former people that called us for some help.
Clients,
thank you. She called me and she says, well, I see a big cat up by our cabin in the woods. And I says, well, are you sure it's not a black bear? And she says, no, it's not a black bear. I've seen it twice. She says, what I'll do is I'll send you a picture on your email and what I'm seeing. And sure enough, boom, there it was. It looked like a black panther, she said. So we're going out this Saturday, and a few of us, and we're going to see if we can find it.
Okay, so let's describe this cat a little bit. Is it bigger than a bread box?
Well, it's bigger than a bread box.
Is it smaller than a car?
Smaller than a car.
But not by much. Is it a pretty big-sized cat from what it looked like? Or?
Well, from what she describes, it's a good-sized cat. Maybe 150 pounds or so. I'm not sure how big it is.
Okay, so we are crossing over the realm of paranormal into the realm of cryptozoology. That's where we're going with this one, folks. Cryptozoology is the study of unknown or unexplainable or out-of-place life forms, right?
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Yeah, there's actually an article on that, too. Now they want to have cryptozoology down to a microscopic level for all of these unknown bacteria and unknown...
That's kind of ridiculous, because at that level, pretty much everything's unknown.
But when we go big cat hunting, really, the only thing you need to remember is you just have to outrun me.
You don't have to outrun the cat, we just have to outrun Pete.
Well, if we're taking any trips here in the near future to do any investigations across the country, I vote we go to Iowa.
What's in Iowa?
Well, there's a group of students who moved into a building near the University of Iowa campus about 2 years ago and didn't really experience any paranormal activity until just recently, like March 20th or so. Though there have been cases of paranormal activity reported at the house, which includes sightings of a ghostly girl, items of furniture being moved around, and explicit feelings of depression and low energy when walking into one of the rooms, the students are reporting that their underwear is being stolen by a ghost. So the second most unusual phenomenon, however, in this particular case is the vanishing underwear. On at least two occasions, the girlfriends of the housemates discovered that their undergarments had been removed during the night and deposited at a random location in the house.
Wait, they're removed from their body during the night?
I'm not sure, but I think we need to get a DVR camera system out there immediately and investigate this place. Unsurprisingly, despite the discovery that the building used to be a funeral home in the 1920s, these latest incidents have been met with a somewhat sizable degree of skepticism, as you can possibly imagine.
Sounds like a case of the panty raid phenomena.
See, sounds like a Thursday night in
town. Yeah, I'm going to go check the local fraternity to see if the ghosts are staying there.
Wait
a minute, where was Vinny?
What local watering hole were they at before this took place?
Dave, I don't make the news, I just report it.
Well, speaking of that, what other news do we have coming down the pipe?
I would like to investigate the White House.
Why is that, Pete?
Because it's haunted.
Amen.
I'd like to have a talk with Abe Lincoln. Big man, big reach.
All right, so now we all know that there's ghosts in the White House, or there's been claims of paranormal activity.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody know specifics of what past presidents or their wives, or I know that some of the past pets have been seen as well.
I just want to see if Marilyn Monroe is really that hot. I'm sure she's in a secret room.
It's true.
Probably plenty of them.
Well, moving on off that, so we don't get kind of wrapped up in this spinning around. Let's move on to some things that that RIP is doing. First and foremost, at the end of the month, we're going to be at the Hulbert House for our big HulbertCon event, which will be running June 28th through the 30th. We're going to have our celebrity guest, John Zaffis, there from Haunted Collector, hanging out with us. He's going to actually help us put on a workshop to teach advanced ghost hunting techniques. We're going to have meals there. We're going to have a lecture by John on the paranormal, and as well as an actual investigation for the VIP and Golden Pass ticket holders. And for some of the very brave people there, they actually rented rooms for the weekend through our Golden Pass ticket, and they're going to actually stay in the Hulbert House. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of stories we get back on that. But if anyone out there in our listening audience is interested in buying tickets, we have a limited supply, and just to let you know, last year we turned away about 75 people at the door. Now, we only have 125 seats, so if no one showed up for the event and we sold tickets the night of the event, we pretty much would have sold it out almost. So just to let you know, folks, if you want to come, join us, learn about us, learn some ghost hunting techniques, and meet John Zaffis, please, by all means, go to worldinvestigatorsoftheparanormal.com, and the ticket options are there, and you can pay by credit card. Or you can contact me by email, which is richgpcollegeent@gmail.com. That's Rich, G as in George, P as in Paul, collegeent@gmail.com. Now, Pete also has an event he wants to share with us. It's actually coming up this weekend.
Well, just to piggyback on your Hulbert thing, it's important for people to know that last year we had 125 people investigating inside the Hulbert House, which we actually could accommodate, being three levels plus the basement. This year we decided to cut it down to 60 tickets combined. That's between Golden Pass members who want to stay there and for the VIPs. So you're going to have four levels of people, very small groups, plus you're investigating with John Zaffis, so I think it's going to be a really good time.
Well, it was quite the feat of engineering that Pete put together for us last year. We knew we were going to have about 125 people investigating, and we have four floors. And we're just kind of trying to figure out what we're going to do with these people, how we're going to coordinate this all. Pete drew up some diagrams and some schematics and applied some differential equations, and the next thing you know, he had a...
Actually, I can't take credit. It was Long Island iced tea.
And we actually came up with a plan to take 125 people on an investigation, and it worked out really smoothly. I mean, I was quite impressed how the operation went, Pete, so caps off to you. But this hour, we're only going to do 60-some people because it's going to be a smaller group. And our weekend VIP members and Golden Pass ticket holders are going to be treat for a Friday night investigation where we're going to kind of let them go up to the third floor, supervise, obviously, but RIP, and let them go mosey around a little bit and try to get some evidence. So
we are exciting in the investigation realm, and also Friday night we'll be DJing a party, bar night, dancing, RIP, John Zaffis. It's going to be crazy.
And yes, you can do shots off of Pete's stomach. So we'll be doing the belly button shots. So.
We're pretty sure we're going to get one of those blow-up sheep, too, and give it to Mike, and just Lord knows where that's going to go.
Inflatable party sheep.
Oh, well, yeah, that brings me to the next thing. We have a second celebrity guest that's going to be at HarborCon, Halifax Warburton. He'll be coming all the way from the other coast to come visit us.
Lake Delta?
I was thinking more like England, Scotland.
Across the pond.
Wales, across the pond. So, yeah, you definitely can't miss out on Halifax Warburton. He's going to be there spreading his cheer and his British joy to everybody.
I hope nobody's Googling Halifax Warburton right now. You kind of have to be there to...
Oh, no, he has a Facebook page now.
Oh, does he really? Oh, all right, then by all means.
Folks, go to Facebook, type in...
Halifax
Warburton, and he's got a page. And he does look a little bit like the Monopoly Man, just to let you know.
But that is our beloved Mike. It's his alter ego.
That's awesome.
But yes, and coming up this Friday at the historic Cam Roden Corners Church in Floyd, New York, we'll be doing a presentation, which starts at 7 o'clock. It's open to the public. It's free. They might have some cookies out. We're going to be giving a quick lecture on how to ghost hunt, and then we're going to be showing you a poop load of evidence.
Okay, now the Cam Roden Church. Pete, let's hear a little bit about the history of the Cam Roden Church.
Well, if you stick around a little bit after lecture, Pete's going to have a Pilates class. He's going to hold in there, so.
Do what?
Pilates.
Dude, I fell off an elliptical machine one time.
No
Pilates. I'm not that coordinated.
Folks, he's Googling Pilates right now to try to figure out what it is.
Some kind of hamburger, right? Well, the historic Cam Roden Church was built in 1864. It's actually on the Historic Register of New York State Landmarks. It's called the Corners because it was one of four buildings on one of each four corners. Across the street, I believe it was a tannery, a post office, and a school, none of which still survive except for the church. Now, we've been good friends with the Town of Floyd's historian for many years, and that's pretty much been our training ground of new investigators, trying out new equipment. Actually, we were just there last Friday. Mm-hmm. Had a few interesting things happen.
Yeah, we brought a couple of our new investigators, Larry and Kathy, with us. And though the activity was... probably not as great as it's been in the past. Right towards the end of the night, when we were trying to make our decisions about how much longer to stay, is when we actually saw the shadows up in that balcony start to form, kind of like a funnel cloud, as Pete described it, which is probably the best way to view it. And we saw it on one corner, and then we saw it move to the other corner. And, of course, you know, just as we were trying to get out of there, because the gentleman who was letting us in there needed to leave. So, but, you know, we still have to look through all the audio evidence. I'm sure we got something.
But that was also one of your best instances, wasn't it, the Cam Roden Church?
That switched me from a skeptic to a believer. Absolutely.
And that's where we picked Steve up when we did one of our public events.
Yeah, I think we need to turn this over to Steve for a minute because, I mean, we've been investigating this church for the better part of 10 years, and Pete has developed many cases of breast sweat in that location. But above and beyond that paranormal incident, every single time we go there, really unusual things happen. So, Steve, I know it was your first experience or your first investigation there. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your experiences there?
Well, it was my first, very first investigation. My cousin Nicole, who's a member, her sister wanted me to come up, and I went up, and the things that we find there are very like the shadow in the corner, like you mentioned earlier, but while we were packing up and starting to get ready to go, the funnel cloud in the corner. It's a very interesting place, very old place, and we always find something there.
There's always some kind of evidence that forms for us when we're there, but even above and beyond the times that we're there, there's been instances where we've left the equipment to record overnight, and on the audio recorders, we've caught some pretty amazing things. We caught an organ playing itself several times, several notes. It was
an organ playing with itself?
An organ playing itself. It was a pump organ that used electricity, obviously, which was unplugged and untouched for the better part of 10 years, and it played several times. One night we've captured voices, we've captured doors closing, footsteps, all sorts of interesting things when we leave that equipment going overnight.
Actually, last Saturday when we were there, when you were playing the organ, mm-hmm. it seemed like it was the level of activity was starting to pick up every time you went in there and played that organ.
Yeah, last year we were there.
It was very interesting.
Pete suggested I go in and play the organ that started playing by itself overnight, and after doing so, Pete said the activity level spiked a little bit.
Yeah, at one point I thought the fifth dimension was going to tear open and all kinds of things were going to step into the darkness.
And then likewise this time, after a few unusual incidents, Pete also said, come play the organ.
I think the fifth dimension is going to open up and weird. No.
And sure enough.
But whatever it is, you could tell must be happy in there because the energy of the church changes. It's sort of like it's comforted by hearing music in there again. I mean, the church has been vacant for many years. It's still available to rent, but I think it's just that good old-time religion. We asked you to pound some Roadhouse Boogie on that.
You did, but I thought that might be a bit inappropriate.
It's dark out. The hallways are barely illuminated. I turn the corner, and there's that doll. She's just staring at me. Of course, I'm referring to the Hulbert House again.
Why do we keep going back to the Hulbert House?
So the only thing that would make the Hulbert House more creepy than it is if there were clowns in there. Dolls and clowns are just...
Well, we have the dolls.
Yeah.
Those dolls are really creepy.
Have you ever seen me when I'm hungry?
It's not quite as bad as those dolls.
But we forgot to point out that Dr. David there put a video up last night on Facebook. Quick tour
yes,
of the Hulbert House.
Yeah, the guys went in and they did some recording last week, and we spliced it together into a little promo for the event that we're doing. But in the process of doing that, Pete explains a little bit about one of the rooms and its former inhabitants. Rich also explains some of the unusual activity that was experienced by him and Steve, who's here tonight, in the second floor hallway. So, number one, if you want to see what the Hulbert House looks like inside, please visit the YouTube channel. Number two, if you want to see what Pete and Rich look like, please visit the Hulbert House channel. Number three, I'm sorry, the YouTube channel for the Rome Investigators of the Paranormal. And number three, if you really want some additional information about the event coming up, we have that tied into the video as well.
It's been a really busy month again. We got a lot of stuff on the bulletin board, huh, Steve? I mean,
yes, we do, actually. Not only this weekend, but I'm working on other things for July. I'm hoping to have two reinvestigations for us. And I call them reinvestigations because we actually been there. But sometimes it takes more than one investigation to find out what's really going on. So when we do another investigation of a place, I send in, or we send in, a different team altogether. And that's what we got so far coming in July.
And that's worth pointing out, because people look at us very strange when we're like, we're going back to that house again, or for the fourth or fifth time. It's like, isn't once enough? But if everyone claims to be scientific and they're doing studies, wouldn't you have to go back there more than once?
Absolutely.
I mean, not everything's going to happen the first time. Usually it's right after we leave.
Or so the homeowners claim.
Well, how about last weekend? That's always my favorite weekend. The City of Rome garage
sale. City of Rome public garage sale.
That was fun.
My goodness.
That was fun.
You want to see paranormal, head on out to the City of Rome garage sale.
Was spousal abuse for 20 minutes not enough?
Well, I mean, we always try and do a little bit of public service and set up information booths and whatnot at different local and regional events. And what better one to do than our own local Rome events?
And then we got Canal Fest coming up, too, our other joyful event.
Canal Fest is coming up in August as well.
It's just events we have to go to. I think the public actually enjoys seeing us. And the free bracelets about that say stay spooky.
That's a hit. It's a gold mine, those stay spooky bracelets.
They sure are.
Which, by the way, was invented by Halifax Warburg.
Yes, they were.
Whether you're an investigator, an enthusiast, or an ethereal spirit,
okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are back, and we are going to talk about a little piece of tech at the moment. We're going to, tonight, talk about something that's known as the Spirit Box, or the Frank's Box. And what this device is, it's basically a modified radio that is set to scan through the frequencies at about 4 stations per second. So what this device does is, in a location, when you have the radio scanning, you're supposed to be listening for full and complete words or full and complete sentences with a consistent voice, because at 4 or 5 stations per second, it's very difficult to discern full words from within the static. So we have Frank's boxes, right, guys?
We do.
Yes, we do.
And we enjoy using them.
Oh, do you remember the first one, the original Shack Hack, that one of our former members threw up against the wall because it was so annoying?
Yeah. You know, when you're using this tool, you got to really understand that you're going to be sitting listening to static for 20, 30, 40 minutes sometimes before anything comes through, especially if you're in a very dense location like concrete walls in basements or caverns where you can't get any radio signals. I don't know. I've always had mixed feelings about this device. I can never seem to hear anything that pops through. But yet, other people on our team can get full, complete words and sentences. And, you know, it's just weird how it happens.
I must be the prodigy, then.
Yeah, Pete always gets weird stuff. And he gets very unusual things like swearing and insults. And, you know, it helps.
Well, there's a lot of Italians around here.
If anything lends a little bit of credibility to what a Frank's Box does, it would be the fact that every now and then you get swear words and derogatory comments and insults coming through. Because think about it, how often would those things be actually on public radio? So, I don't know. I'm still up in the air about it.
Again, about 2 weeks ago, Steve and I were on an investigation, and Alex's last name came over the Frank's Box.
That's true.
And that is not a last name that's going to ever be on the radio.
Andrzejewski, yeah, that's right. when people's personal names do come over during an investigation, or when probative pieces of information also happen to pop up, you know, that's something that really makes you sit back and think twice about dismissing it.
We also posted that child that we got from the old nursing home there a couple weeks ago in the Frank's box. But the more I listen to that, I'm actually believing that's an EVP, not a Frank's box.
Yeah, you can always tell a Frank's box voice. It still, it doesn't necessarily sound quite natural. It still has a little bit of a robotic characteristic. But this EVP that we're speaking of was a child's voice that came on top of the Spirit Box session that we were conducting.
Said his name the first time, then we asked again, said it again, and then there was something else he said that was inaudible. But I think we actually heard him laughing out in the hallway at one point. So that
audibly?
May have been really...
Yeah. Okay, we're just receiving word that our guest caller is on the line, so we're going to pause our discussion of the Frank's Box for a few moments, and we're going to welcome our caller.
Caller,
hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Can you tweak her down a little bit? Hello, this is Rich. How are you tonight?
Hi, Rich. Good, good. I'm so excited about being on your show tonight.
Oh, excellent. Let me give the listening audience an introduction of you first, and then we'll commence with some questions. Is that okay?
That's great.
Okay. All right, so tonight's guest is Paulette Huff, and for those of you who don't know her, she is a co-founder of Spirited Chat Entertainment, as well as a historian and a paranormal investigator like us. She travels the country speaking, providing psychic counseling, and tarot card readings at Paranormal Investigator Training Academy, or as we also know as PETA, events at the public and haunted hotels, bed and breakfasts, as well as colleges and conferences like HauntedCon in Arizona. Through the Veil in Atlanta and other similar events around the country, she's also featured on Scariest Places on Earth. Please welcome Paulette Huff.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Well, thank you for joining us tonight and giving us a little bit of your time. I've got a couple questions for you, if you don't mind. First of all, let me just tell the listening audience, if anyone knows who Chris Moon is, this is Chris Moon's mom.
I'm Chris Moon's mommy.
Mommy. Okay, sorry about that. So I just wanted to make sure everybody knew about that first. Are you there?
Yes.
Sorry, we got
I'm
a couple
here.
Of pause in the line here. So let me just ask you a couple questions, Paulette. When did you become interested in the paranormal?
Well, that's kind of an interesting question. Actually, from a very young age, my grandfather and my great aunt used to tell me these stories about their experiences with ghosts. And I was always fascinated, always thought that there was, you know, something else out there, something that we didn't see or feel before. And I always had a feeling that some spirits didn't always move on, that they actually had maybe messages for us or warnings for us, and that we try to find a way to communicate with them and pay attention to them. And actually, my first experience with a full-bodied apparition actually happened when I was about 23 years old, and I was actually pregnant with Chris at the time. And I had been in a really bad car accident, which was, you know, had a lot of the doctors concerned what was going to happen with me. And so as the pregnancy went on, one particular morning I woke up and I was laying there very quietly, and I saw at the foot of my bed a full-bodied apparition, which was, you know, kind of interesting. And I didn't have a feeling of fear or worry. In fact, I had a feeling of connection, kind of a maternal connection to this apparition. And we started to communicate telepathically. And I knew that she had some sort of a message or a warning for me. And as we continued to speak to each other, so to say. She warned me that there was going to be a problem with the delivery of the baby, and under no circumstances should I allow the doctors to do a C-section. So when this was over, I kept thinking, now, does every pregnant woman have this kind of thing happen, or am I special, or what's going on? So as I finally did go into labor, 23 and a half hours later, the doctor made a decision that he was going to do a C-section. And, of course, I went back to this memory of this communication with the spirit, and I knew this couldn't happen. Luckily for me, I did have a nurse who decided to try to, after the doctor left, massage the baby into the birth canal, and he was born on March 25th. What's really interesting to me is I had lost both my grandmothers within a month of each other. And one of my grandmothers was actually born on the 24th of March. So I always felt this was my connection with her and the warning. Now, what else is kind of interesting about the story is that when Chris was born, I kind of observed him and wondered if he had any of these kind of special gifts or something was going to happen to him. And sure enough, at age 7, he was telling me about his experience with a little Indian boy that he was seeing a full-bodied apparition, and that they were talking, and he would come every night. And so I knew at this point there probably was some kind of connection to the other side. Now, Chris and I started doing ghost hunting together before they even had digital cameras or EVP equipment, even before ghost hunting was popular. So I think I'm probably one of the oldest mama, grandma, paranormal investigators around.
You're a grandma paranormal investigator?
Isn't that crazy? And mother and son investigating team, we're out there, have been out there for years. I don't know how many more of us there are out there, but I think it's kind of interesting, and we have such great connections, and we pick up so many different things that it really makes the investigations so interesting and I think really unique.
I haven't thought that IRP should form a ghost hunting club, to be quite honest with you, but that's just me.
Okay.
Another question for you. I know you've traveled across the country a lot with Chris doing Ghost Hunter University programs and investigating a lot of well-known haunted locations. Of all these, what was the most memorable one that you've ever done?
Well, you know, and I think about it, that we do. We travel all over the country. I mean, from New Orleans to Galveston to California. I mean, a lot of different places. But actually, I have to say that there were two events that probably were the most memorable to me. One of them was at the Lizzie Borden Bed and Breakfast. Do you guys know the story about Lizzie Borden, the oldest unsolved murder case in the history of the United States?
That's an amazing place.
Okay, yeah. Well, you know, Lizzie was the one that was supposedly that took the axe and gave her father 40 whacks, and when she was done, she gave her mother, which was her stepmother, 41, and so we were really interested in doing this investigation, and Chris was really interested in trying to find out not who killed the Bordens, but why they were killed. This was what he went in with. He wanted to do this. So the first investigation we did there, actually we were using Telephone to the Dead or the Spirit Box. And we were getting a lot of very, very negative things from Andrew Borden. I mean, he was extremely hateful, and especially to Chris and to some of the other women that were in our group. So we'd had a very interesting investigation, and like two crazy people, we decided that we were going to spend the night. It was a B&B. We might as well spend the night. So I was given actually Andrew Borden's bedroom, and Chris was given what they called the dressing room. That's where they stored all the clothes and the trunks and the different things. So after a very fun-filled evening, we decided that we would go to bed. And I kept having, you know, that uncomfortable feeling like somebody was watching me or somebody was still in the room, and of course there was no one there. So every time I would try to get comfortable or lay down in the bed, if I turned my back to what would be the hallway, very distinctly I heard a woman's voice go, "Don't turn your back, don't turn your back." And immediately I would roll over and not turn my back. And I thought, this is really crazy. I'm hearing this right in my ear very loudly. So as I lay there trying to go back to sleep, which was really difficult, I could hear Chris in the other room, and he was thrashing around. And I kept hearing like a choking sound or coughing sound. So being the mama that I am, I kept thinking, I've got to get up and go look and see what's going on with him. But it was like something was laying on my chest and wouldn't allow me to get up out of the bed. And I thought, this is absolutely crazy. There's nothing here. Why can't I get up? So finally when it got light and I figured there's not going to be any sleeping, I'm going to get up and get dressed and get out of here. I've had enough of this. Chris was getting up at the same time. And when we saw each other, and we both looked like hell because we hadn't slept all night, and puffy eyes and weary, and he's rubbing his head, and I'm looking at him, and he says, "You know, the craziest thing, Mom, all night I kept hearing this woman's voice say, 'Don't turn your back.'" And I looked at him, and I said, "Oh, my God, I've had the same experience all night, the same woman." I said, "And I could hear you coughing or choking. What was going on?" He said, I really don't know, but," and as he pulled down his shirt, I looked at his throat, and there were actual red marks around his throat. So needless to say, we don't spend the night at the Lizzie Borden house anymore.
Yeah, that's this is the end of that expedition. So we're actually thinking as a group, RIP, of actually going there on a weekend and trying to get the place for like at least all day Saturday night and do an investigation with our members. So we've been contemplating that, and we'd like to open some discussions with Lizzie Borden on that. I think it's a great place. I was there. I was there at the time that Travel Channel was there with Chris, and they were going through a special on them. So very interesting place. And you know what I really liked about it? The place was so clean, organized, and you know, it didn't look like it was an old house from the 1800s. It was, you know, all the original decor, but it was just so well built and clean. And I don't know, it's just this one thing that was there. So let me ask you another question. When I was at a convention with you back in Nashville, I noticed you were doing tarot card readings for people. And that's kind of always something that intrigued me. And I'm sure there's many people in our listening audience that like to know a little bit more about tarot cards. So do you think you could give us a brief tarot card 101 description of what are tarot cards are used for? And I noticed that a lot of psychics that I've seen also rely on tarot cards. And kind of what is the correlation or the connection between tarot cards and psychic readings?
Okay, it's a very, very, very old practice that they've been trying to for years and years and years find out where it originally began. A lot of people say it was in Asia, some say it was in Egypt, France, Italy. Nobody knows really where it began, the art of tarot card reading. They do think that it originated as a card game. Now, a lot of the nobles used to use the cards in order to figure out battles and who should marry who, and actually fortune-telling. That's where the gypsies kind of came into it, this fortune-telling or telling of the future. And I kind of use it differently in my psychic counseling, because what I do is I actually start out with getting a person in a very relaxed state. I like to play very comfortable music, getting them in a very calm state. I try to bring down their heart rate so that I can ask them questions like, what are they having problems with? What are they concerned about, relationships, family, things, stuff like this. Then what I do is I read their aura. A lot of tarot card readers don't read auras, but I like to read the auras. That's the colors that everyone generates their energy. I like to look at that. I like to see where they're coming from. Then I do what's called a tarot spread. Depending upon the question that's asked to me, we do a certain spread where I'm able to put the cards out. Each card has a certain meaning. I look at the cards. I read them. I talk to the people about what's going on in their life. Sometimes medical things come up for me. I can see that there is some question about some testing that needs to be done. So I use the cards in order to answer the questions. Now, in my particular case, I was taught the cards from my great aunt. She was from Saracena, Italy, and the cards were always used there to answer questions. I mean, small questions like what's going to happen today to, you know, future of people's lives, marriages, different things like that. So she taught me everything that I know about the cards from what she had learned over the years. Now, when I was a teenager, I used to have my girlfriends always come to me and want me to read the cards for them. And I reluctantly did it because it was always questions about their boyfriends. Were they cheating on them? Were they being honest with them? And a lot of times I got myself into some real problems because I would tell them the truth, what the cards said, because the cards never lie. And then, of course, my girlfriends would be mad at me, not at their boyfriends.
That's kind of comical. I actually have a question for you regarding a specific tarot card. One of our members just sent us a text message, and he said to be sure to ask you about the Hermit card. I don't know if that's a valid card or if it's just something...
Yes, it is. It is. It's one of my favorites. One of my favorites in the tarot deck. And usually, when this card comes up, I'm usually finding someone who's extremely intelligent, someone who is very intellectual to a point. The problem with the tarot card of the Hermit is the fact that usually these people pull away from what's going on around them. These are the kind of people that get so into themselves and into what they're thinking and what they're doing that they have to kind of be shaken up a bit and brought back into reality because they sometimes cut themselves off from their friends and their families and the surroundings around them. And they're usually extremely intelligent people, but they have to have a very strong counter person in their life in order to bring them back into reality of what's going on in the world.
Gotcha. Okay.
He
was wondering if that was, actually the background of that particular card. He was under the assumption that some of these tarot cards have real life origins, as if a card was at some point developed in honor of or in memory of a particular person. He had found somewhere that Joseph of Arimathea was in some way connected to the tarot deck and in particular the Hermit card, and he said, make sure you ask Paulette when she comes on. So I wanted to make sure I brought that up to you.
Well, thank you for the question. That's a very good question, and I do have to say that I have read many times that each card does have a particular personality that is, with it. So that could very well be true.
Gotcha.
Well, great. Well, Paulette, thank you so much for being a guest on tonight's show. We've learned a lot from you, and I hope to see you very soon once again. And, again, thank you for taking your time to tell us a little bit about the tarot cards. So have yourself a wonderful night.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. I hope we can do this again sometime.
Absolutely. Thank you again, Paulette. We enjoyed it.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
I mean, usually we don't get too much into the, I don't know, you wouldn't necessarily call that metaphysical, would you?
I think to a certain degree you would, because a lot of psychics use it. If you want to read more about tarot cards, you can simply just go to your friend Wikipedia and type in tarot. And like Paulette said, it actually started as a card game. It
yep.
wasn't used for metaphysical purposes
right.
or anything until long after it was devised as a game.
Well, much the same way with our old friend the Ouija board.
Oh, yes, our old friend the Ouija board.
And how is that spelled? W-E-E-G-E?
That's correct.
For years, I called that an Ojuwada-Dujuwa.
Well, actually, I found something kind of interesting I'll share with everyone here quickly.
Yeah, go ahead.
Done with things. One thing I always wanted to know is, what are, like, the 10 scariest places in the nation, or 10 scariest places on Earth? So I did a lot of digging around, and I found a site called Listverse, which I'm sure some of you are aware of. And on here we have the 10 most terrifying places, folks, on Earth. Now, you're going to be surprised, because there's, like, two of these I've heard of, and eight I've never. So it's kind of interesting. So if you go to listverse.com and then you basically go through and search on 10 most terrifying places on Earth, you'll find some interesting places. So let's start quickly with number 10. Number 10 is a place called the Riddle House. You guys ever heard of this place?
Mm-hmm. Is that the house that's crooked?
No.
No. It's actually located in Palm Beach County, Florida. Well, if you can think of anything being scary in Florida with palm trees, but there's a whole story behind
retirees.
And the goal is not to go into too depth on this, but I just want to count off the 10. So the Riddle House is number 10. Going to number 9 is a place, by name, I think it would be number 1, but it's called Helltown, which is in the northern part of Summit County, which is in Ohio. So, and just by looking at the pictures of this place looks creepy. So you can read more about that. Number 8 is Stoll Cemetery in Kansas. You guys ever heard of that place?
Nope, never.
Actually, that's the only one I've actually heard of. Number 7 is a place called The Ridges, which is originally known as the Athens Lunatic Asylum.
Sounds awesome.
Again, in Ohio. Ohio's got a lot of creepy places, man. If you go, I mean, it's not that big of a state, but man, they got some really creepy things going on there. I'm just saying.
I thought New York capitalized on creepy.
Yeah.
Ohio does a good job of it. So, number 6 is the Humberstone and Lunaria. This is two abandoned mining towns that are in Chile. And this I remember because it was featured on Destination Truth on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Ah, okay.
That's right, I remember this one. So those are the two, folks. Actually, 3, I lied. Number 5 is Byberry Mental Asylum, okay, which is actually the Philadelphia State Hospital is what it was originally known as. Number 4... this is the other one I heard of because I watch Ghost Hunters. And that is Leap Castle.
Leap Castle.
Leap
Ireland.
Castle.
I was there.
Yes. Awesome place. Awesome episode.
That was an awesome place.
On Ghost
place.
Hunters. Number 3, Shades of Death Road. Well, there you go. So, this is actually in New Jersey. It's a road that winds through 7 miles of countryside. And if you read through, there's some really creepy things right along to where they're finding a whole bunch of Polaroids of women scattered along the side of the road that is just creeping itself. Number 2, and I'm not going to try to slaughter the name of this, the Toll Sing Genocide Museum. And that's in Cambodia. So, enough said on that one. And going to number 1, scariest places on Earth, the Mines of Paris. Yes, folks, Catacombs and Mines of Paris is the scariest place on Earth. That's number 1. So check it out. Listverse.com, 10 most terrifying places on Earth.
I would think that my wash machine is the scariest place on Earth after an investigation. Between the breast salt and the things that are in the underwear.
Oh, good God. Well,
that's the 10 grossest places on Earth.
On that note, ladies and gentlemen, we have reached the end of another show. We want to thank Paulette Huff, our special guest, for coming on our show tonight. And we want to remind everybody, ParanormalInvestigator.com is our website. I'm sorry, ParanormalInvestigatorRadio.com is our website. And we are the Rome Investigators of the Paranormal. You could find us at RomeInvestigatorsOfTheParanormal.com or on Facebook. And make sure you check out our website for tickets to our upcoming HalbertCon 2013. So on behalf of myself,
Rich Nicodem,
Steve Roscoe,
Peter Breastsoul,
We will see you in a couple of weeks.
Godspeed, man. Godspeed.
Peace out, man.
I'm gonna go get some more.